You're listening to Podcast on Fire. It's Asian cinema in a podcast with your hosts, the magnificent trio of Stu, Ken, and Mike.
Hello and welcome to Podcast on Fire. I am your host, Stuart Sutherland. Joining me, we have Ken.
Kenny, Kenju, Kenatham, yes. Ken and Blossom.
Yes, yes. All of those in the
yes.
One.
Yes, sir.
So, yes, it is episode 67. Aye, 67. I think it's that now.
Yeah.
It is really gone to the point where we're losing count.
Yeah, we're doing Japan on Fire's in between, and they're not numbered, but they occupy a number in the pop timeline, in a way.
I know. When we originally started, I really wish we would have spanned that off onto its own mini-series, and so it wouldn't have interfered with our numbers. But I'm not going back to fill in, like, episode 38. 44, 60.
Redux!
Aye. Podcast on Fire, back in time. So, yes. Basically, tonight we are going to be covering a bountiful of subjects, covering everything from Shaw Brothers, updates on the websites, talking about future specials. We have questions. Yep, we're going to answer a couple of questions tonight, some concerning Chilean fat, and a healthy amount of plugging as usual, but to get started all off, you can interact with the show via email at podcastonfire@googlemail.com. Or, of course, you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and, of course, just come to our website, podcastonfire.com, where we do have plenty of extras.
Yeah, so, the members-only content for the current Japan on Fires and the upcoming Japan on Fires is plentiful. We're talking 30, 40 minutes extras on future shows. So it's free to join the forum and the members only. So that's all fun.
Yep, yep. So if you want to get directly there, it is podcastonfire.com/forum. So, starting off this evening, updates from Podcast on Fire. Of course, as you notice, it is just me and Ken this evening. Mike Banner is in the process of getting his shit together and moving over to South Korea.
He had his shit together before.
I mean packing.
Ah!
I didn't mean like mentally.
Gonna try and make you a bit. I was gonna try and get you a bit nervous. I like you, Michael. Yeah, sorry. He's moving to Korea.
He is indeed. Starting a new life out there. So, basically, he will be absent for the next few shows until we can actually establish a decent time for all of us to meet up and record the show. I think the time difference is pretty crazy.
Yeah, if there's a desire, then there's a way to get it done. But what I shall say is I think the amount of shows might be, or rather the amount of shows per month or what have you will be slightly less, because the next subject we're heading into is talking about the various Podcast on Fire specials, and one of those I'd like to have Mike on, because it's the Shaw Brothers show, and I would like Mike to be on that, and we'll just have to patiently wait, because Mike is still part of the trio and will always be, and so we won't exclude him and have auditions for someone else.
Oh, so I should have sent those emails out.
Fact. Oops.
Anyway.
But on air, I have to say, I've said this to Mike, and a brave step to take. Just throw yourself out into the unknown in a way. Well, okay, it's not like he's going there and not knowing where to live or if he's going to live in our apartment or not, but it's a different world and a different way of life than Mike is used to, and so he's throwing himself out and growing wings on the way down, as a famous lyric says, you know. So good luck Mike, and hope to hear from you on the show, albeit sporadically. But what else are we doing on Podcast on Fire?
Well, we are in the middle of planning several specials, as you have mentioned already. So, obviously, come on, let's get the cat out of the bag and mention one or two of them.
Yeah, basically, I'm working on three, When I say I'm working, it's not like
It is really just Ken working. I'm sitting there with my feet up. Just send me the emails. Let me know what's happening.
I have no problem with that because I like doing this work. So, I mean, we have our roles in the Podcast on Fire HQ. You know, you have your, you know, contacts with the cinema world and getting screeners and stuff like that. And you're close to the source of a lot of things that I am not. And therefore, I have no problem with doing the research and stuff. So what we're planning is a first of three or either four shows covering the legendary Shaw Brothers studio. And this is one show I'd like Mike to be on. So that therefore, this might take a little while to get together. But we're doing I'm saying it's a 60s show, 1960s show. But in reality, it will actually cover the very tail end of the 50s, because one of the movies we've chosen is made in 1959, and to give you what the content will be, because I think you all deserve this. So we will be covering Wucha, of course. That was a genre that exploded in the 60s, but prior to that, Huang Mei operas. We're going to be looking at operas, musicals, because they were mighty big in the 50s and 60s from Shaw Brothers. And that's going to be different. And therefore, it's well worth acknowledging. And we will have two guests on, one of which you have heard before, and well-respected author and Hong Kong cinema expert will join us as well. Who? I'm not telling.
You fucking tease.
Yeah. So, and to briefly run through the other specials we're planning, regardless or not, we might get this a guest on for this show. We're doing it anyway, regardless if he comes on or not. But the Yuen Woo Ping True Legend episode, which will happen fairly soon because it opens in a week or two in the Chinese New Year. Yuen Woo Ping's a big martial arts epic about Beggar Su, the character from Drunken Master. This time played by Choi Min.
Another than, yes. Is it Vincent? Man, what name do you choose him by?
I like Vincent Chao, Le Chao Wen Chao. Because he's a mainlander after all, I believe. But Choi Man Chuk, obviously.
Aye, that's how he was put down over here in the UK when it was releases such as The Black Sheep Affair. Yeah. And I give one.
Blade, I reckon.
Oh, yeah, there's Blade as well. Hong Kong Legends also released another film with him, Hank. It was Body something? Was that Body Weapon?
Yeah, Body Weapon, the Category 3 movie. And obviously he took over the Wong Fei-hung role from Jet Li. Not took over, he got cast as Wong Fei-hung when Jet Li decided to leave the Once Upon a Time in China series. And he starred in 4-5 and the TV series that followed. And it's been out of the loop in terms of feature movies, but it's now in a big movie again. Hopefully that's going to be fun. So Yuen Woo Ping's A True Legend also stars Ye Chao.
Yeah, he's got a pretty funky, like, maybe a eunuch type gear going on with the long white hair.
He apparently designed his own clothes for that film. I read that the other day. There you go. David Carradine is in a minor part. It was his last movie.
Right.
And Michelle Yao, Andy On, and some mainland stars and stuff like that. So it's going to be fun. We're going to be covering that to sort of be topical, to bring out the show when the movie at least hits Hong Kong and mainland theaters. And I'm sure we'll talk about it when it reaches other shores such as UK and the United States, because this is, of course, going to be sold internationally. It's a big movie. It's a martial arts movie. Not a small shot in a week kind of thing. We're doing that, and also finally especially on Jackie Chan, and we're not gonna try and bring anything new, because there's or rather we're not gonna be talking about stuff you already know, because there's been so much books and stuff written about Jackie Chan. So we're gonna be basically discussing his movie career and specific movies, and revolutionary thoughts on them, but I think a biography on him, a detailed one, that's not necessary really. Just the the fine points in one paragraph, you know, the, some minor points, and then launched into his movie career. So those are alive and kicking, and we'll see how those go. So be patient with us, but we're working hard behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm. Ken, you are in the middle of redesigning So Good Reviews, your own review website. So come on, give us details.
Going well. Should state that I'm not designing shit, actually, because I can't do this stuff. So I've hired someone to help me do the layout, which is going well. It's actually fixed. Now it's just a matter of transferring the old content into the new template. And Brian Kirby of Shelf Life Clothing has helped me out with a lot of the graphics on the site. We've got a cool new animated header that's going to be on the main site and a few of the main page and a few of the other sites' pages, like reviews and special features. And the site now has a more of a theme rather than the plain old black that it was. But it's still dark. I'm not turning it white and more readable. And so it's going to be good. Hopefully I'll be able to relaunch it somewhere between the 8th of next month, February, and the 15th of next month, all depending on the website designer, his progress. But it's going good, and I'm really looking forward to relaunching the site. And now that, you know, I've established an image online, to be perfectly honest, of someone who reviews pretty much everything, but the general image is that of the dirty, gritty, the unknown, trashy, plain out bad. You know, I'll take on anything, and that doesn't include the likes of Police Story. I never will. because there's nothing for me to say on those films, really. I'm completely drawn a blank as to what to say. I love them, the likes of Police Story, but I'd rather like watch, you know, the as much of the category 3 sexploitation output from the 90s as I can, because that makes me happy. That kind of fascinates me. And to be honest, when I listen back to shows like, you remember the John Crane show, two-parter, both those shows where I participated had a exploitation vibe to them. And I notice, and this is not me bragging or anything, but I notice when I'm in my element. You know, when the words keep flowing out of me, you know, on the show, and that applies to my writing as well. So how do you choose a theme based on all that? Or what theme do you choose? And we ended up with, you know, something akin to that. Because if you look at so many genres at once, you can't really do a theme covering all of those, because it would look really busy and really unfocused. Graphically, so but you'll all see what I mean when the site relaunches, and we'll let you know. It's going to be fun. So thanks for all the support so far, and I'll keep you posted on the likes of Facebook and Twitter.
Yes. So our things on the website, well, on our site, I am planning on maybe cleaning up our right menu bar. There's parts of me that just wants to start that afresh. So maybe in the next few months, I'm sure it would take me like an hour or two at the max, but for me, over the next few months, I might look into cleaning that up, maybe getting us easier links to Twitter and Facebook, and just making it easily accessible for the public. Mm. So even if anyone's got any suggestions, recommendations, things we should maybe actually even put in, post it on our forum or fire off an email at us, which is podcastandfire@googlemail.com. But other than that, I think it is now time for our last movies watched.
Because we have time to do that as well.
Mm-hmm.
And we both have had time to watch movies, I hope.
Well.
Okay. Okay. Right. Okay, we'll see what happens after my last movies watched, if you don't mind me going first.
More than welcome to.
Oh, here we go. All right, rewatch, but I never wrote a review of it. Chicken and Duck Talk, the classic Michael Hoy comedy from 1988. But compared to his old comedies like Private Eyes and Security Unlimited, he didn't direct this one, and it's one of the better movies that someone else directed. One of the better Michael Hoy movies. The director is Clifton Coe. I'll talk a little bit about him later on. But the basic plot is Michael Hoy plays Hoy, which is always good and neat, so you can keep track of everyone. He owns a restaurant specializes in barbecue ducks, one of those old-timey Chinese restaurants. It's a less than hygienic establishment. It's kind of falling apart. But Hoy doesn't feel any threat as such. He's quite comfortable. But when a food chain called Danny's opens across the street, he is forced to go through some sort of self-exploration about the way he serves food, how he treats his employees, and how you reach your customers. And family life needs a tune-up as well. So it's a, therefore, it's a template of old-fashioned versus fast and neat. You know, old-fashioned food making versus fast food. And Michael wrote this script together with director Clifton Coe, and they obviously have big, colorful satire as their goal. You know, they're not subtle about what they're doing, but they score hugely on one particular point, and that is neither the restaurant that Hoy runs and Danny's, the fast food restaurant, neither are totally right or wrong in their strategic ways. So it's not a one-sided argument against fast food and against old-timey Chinese traditional food, if you will. The character of Hoy, he's kind of in a daze or a haze because he spends most of his day being loudmouthed and obnoxious, very rude to to his employees in particular, like the likes of Lowell Low, the great composer, and he has a great face as well. He's in a lot of Hong Kong movies. He plays Chimp, which is kind of mean because he looks a bit like a monkey, actually. Lowell Low actually co-stars in Rosa with Yung-Bu and a lot of other stuff. It's a fun face and a great accomplished composer. But yeah, Hoy has become very comfortable with his place in the world. And when Danny's opens, he tries to mimic their strategies like advertising and placing food in nice packaging, and remodeling his restaurant, which is really turns out very bad. It's no way, I can't really explain the gags properly. It's just something you have to watch. It's a fun film. But the head honchos at Danny's, played by Lawrence and Ku Feng, both of which are great. They're out to sabotage their main threat across the street. And Michael Hoy, despite not making this movie himself, and despite Private Eyes and Security Unlimited being, fair few years old at this point, he still got it. He goes into this familiar character shell that he's been in before. He usually plays this loudmouth guy without a foot on the brake. You know, and no internal censorship. He just goes for it. But it's still hilarious, the way he roams the frame. And he also sells that journey, which isn't at all melodramatic, about letting go of your pride and prior instincts and prior structure. It's a journey, but not a serious one. It's still, you know, very funny. So it's not a Hong Kong movie that changes tones, you know, from melodrama to rapes and then comedy, you know. And that's much thanks to Clifton Coe, the director. For his two main accomplishments here is letting his star, Michael Hoy, work without intrusion. And also there's a structure to this Hong Kong comedy. Not a revolutionary structure, but a structure nonetheless. And comedies before, then, and since don't necessarily have that. Hong Kong comedies are very unscripted. This feels very scripted for once. And it's a great cast of goofy faces in the restaurant. As I said, Lois Chimp, who's part of quite a creative skit where he tries to spot how Hoy prepares the ducks, how he seasons them. And he tries to look at a mirror in the ceiling to try and catch it. And they both know of this. you know, Michael knows he's watching, he's being watched, so he takes every precaution he can, and it's kind of silent movie humor, and good silent movie humor at that. And there's also Teddy Yip, a familiar face if you ever saw him on screen, and Sylvia Chang plays Michael Hoy's wife. Ricky Hoy has a large role, the brother of Michael Hoy, as the main disgruntled worker that actually changes sides and takes a job at Danny's. So there's a great fun scene where he's actually demoted rather than promoted, I think it's called, to the guy who has to stand in the Danny chicken suit and hand out flyers. And Michael Hoy also creates a suit, a rather poor suit, and he fights him eventually on the streets and on roofs and stuff like that. And it's good fun. And the third brother, Sam Hoy, he appears in a cameo merely, like a 1 minute wacky cameo. So it's not too bad. Everyone was there.
So for me, actually, we should actually mention that last night, the date of 26th of January 2010, I did finally complete the ban list. Like, was that like 9 months?
9 years, I don't know.
So, yep, I finally finished it. The last movie on the list was Killer, the 2000 movie directed by Billy Chung. And that was just, what's the words?
shit, crud, bad.
It kind of rhymes along that theme. But yeah, the reason I had looked into the movie in the first place was the first sign we had seen that Edmund Pang, that was almost like his first step into the movie scenes. What the fuck am I saying?
That was basically
the first time we'd heard of Edmund Pang, because he'd worked on the script, but I think it was actually based on a story by him.
Right.
So this was his story, and I thought, well, if he's got so much influence on his own movies, and they've always really had unique stories, some very good stories, and then I thought, well, if I take a step back, and if he was involved in the story of this one, maybe this is like easily a diamond in the rough.
Yeah, you gotta start somewhere, I guess. Mm-hmm.
So, it's just basically four triads leading the life you'd expect of a triad.
What an amazing story that was.
Kill a high-up boss, and then basically them paying for the consequences.
Yeah, it's no Young and Dangerous, is it?
Nah. At first, it actually was giving the impression like, it ran along a lot of the same themes. At least three or four characters with the exact same names. We had Bruce Law playing the role of Tai Fei, and in Young and Dangerous, Anthony Wong plays the character Tai Fei in most of the movies, and just there was some familiar faces. Obviously, Jordan Chan was dressed identical to his old character of Chicken.
It's probably his own wardrobe, you know what I mean? They're probably like, it was such a low budget film. Bring your own wardrobe.
I can't believe he's wearing a black suit. That's exactly what he wore in Young and Dangerous 3. The third scene.
Amazingly exclusive
then again
wear.
In the fifth scene. It wasn't too bad. I was actually finding myself enjoying the performances of characters such as like Mark Cheng more in this movie, because, well, past history, him, he's always been a bit of an asshole in films like Raped by an Angel. He was the guy that was stalking, killing, like having a tug over the TV. Yeah. And like things like that. It's like, oh, this cunt just does my face in. And of course, movies like Election 2, it still made me think, hey, this is an actor, that was a role he was playing. I shouldn't be hating him for this. Well, but
he's in the classic Peking Opera Blues as well, so I mean,
right.
It's a prolific face. Mm-hmm.
But I think he probably had the best role in this movie, because it was like his girlfriend that was being raped by the triads, and of course he was like the noble triad going himself to save her and all this shit. This is usually the role that Ikin Cheng gets in these movies.
Yeah.
Like, he's the hero. But yeah,
It's from that production company, Buddy Film Creative Workshop, that Simon Loy is part of, and I think Billy Chung has directed a lot of movies for them, very low budget movies. And Simon Loy is in this. He's listed as second leading man on Hong Kong Movie Database.
He is one of the main four.
So, I have no problem with a production company, a filming company, churning out low budget movies, but I don't think they have many classics under their belt. As such,
but yeah, it was decent. It's one of these throwaway movies. You watch it once, and you'd never need to watch it again.
Billy Chung's movies usually are not, highly memorable. But he's one of those directors that usually made low budget movies, and occasionally, that low budget equaled their creativity. That was rather entertaining. From this time, you have like Last Ghost Standing from the year before, which is a pretty fun movie. Set at a cinema, I believe, and had a lot of crazy shit in it. Paramount Motel from the same year as Killer was a good sort of thriller drama. Simon Loy is really good in that. And people tend to like My Schoolmate, The Barbarian, the Nikitse Stephen Fung film. I wasn't too keen on that film, but, whatever. It would be decent enough. To Hong Kong Bronx recently from 2008. Try a movie again, but pretty decent aside from the ending. So he's one of those directors I like. I like reviewing his movies because it's easy, and I have a great deal of fun following a director working with often little means. And even though the movie is tend to suck every now and again, I don't mind it. It's kind of, I don't know, it's one of those directors that I like following. It's been active throughout the 90s and still is. I guess the biggest movie from the last few years might be Schoolmate, The Barbarian, as I said, Color of the Loyalty, a co-director. So it's every now and again Wong Jing takes him under his wing as well.
And actually, I'm going to mention one of the films that I wasn't expecting much of, but actually ended up quite enjoying, which was Painted Skin, the 2008 Painted Skin.
Right, with Donnie.
Mm-hmm. And surprisingly, Donnie Yen wasn't actually the lead in the movie.
They had to hold him back. Like,
he was actually more of the background player. It was actually just two female leads, which was Zhao Wei, as we know from many great films, Shaolin Soccer.
So Close.
Exactly. And the other actress who plays the demon in the movie, who I'm not too familiar with, is Qu Yu Wu. I was expecting it. Obviously, there was the Painted Skin movie before that, in the maybe early 90s, which was Sammo Hung,
Lam Ching Ying, Adam Cheng.
Aye, Adam Cheng was the lead, I think. Yep, and Joey Wong was maybe the ghost.
Yes. What do you mean maybe? Of course she was the ghost.
So,
the last King Hu movie.
Right enough.
Mm-hmm. Yep, babe.
But I was expecting it to be more of a remake of that, but as the movie starts, it does mention this is the adaptation of the famous movie based on a famous novel.
Yeah.
So, obviously, it was portraying that story, and it was actually pretty fun. I did find myself nitpicking it, because it is this period film, it is fantasy, but the thing is, it just had this really silly modern editing style.
Like, okay.
It had stupid transitions between scenes, like, because when you have a video editing software and how you make transitions between one thing to another.
Yep.
This movie has transitions as a page turns, like the corner of it peels up and then turns over to another scene, or it does like cuts in two and slides away in different directions.
A comic book feel for some reason.
Mm-hmm. It's like, treat it like a fucking do it at the period. It's like, don't fucking give me this flashy MTV editing style.
Gordon Chan directed it, so
yeah. The Hong Kong Movie Database lists three directors at least, and
yeah, I remember that.
Aye, Andy Chin, Danny Gu, and Gordon Chan.
Yeah.
So it's like, what? Why so many? But I really have to say, by the time I was watching the final fight in the movie, I was thinking, I'm actually really enjoying this. This is a film I could actually see myself going back to and rewatching. Mm. The other leading stars in the movie include Betty Sun Lee, who many will remember for her role in Fearless as the blind lassie that helps Jet Li.
Mm.
She returns as a female Ghostbuster. Basically, it is a form of, I don't think it mentions Taoism, but she is just the basic ghost hunter for this movie. It's in her blood, it's all her family, her dad done this, and she's got like a glowing bottle, and of course the bottle glows more frequently when she's closer to the demon. So there's that role. And Donnie Yen was like an old general who just couldn't be beaten. And it got to the point where he's like, fuck this. And he just sits about and becomes a drunk. And they become like an unlikely duo at the end of the movie when it comes on to taking the demon.
Mm.
So, yeah, it was actually quite surprising. Like, I actually really enjoyed the film.
Mm.
And Zhao Wei does a great job.
How's that other mainland actress in the film, Zhao Jun? I don't know which role she had, but she should be like one of the leading ladies. The girl from she's in True Legend. She's in Hollywood Hong Kong. But yes.
I was daft enough to actually get her name mixed up with the male demon in the movie. She is the other female lead. She is the demon.
Right.
In fact, where basically the movie starts with the band of warriors going through having war, pillaging villages, and they come across her.
Mm.
She's basically been captured by bandits, and they were just going to basically have their way with her and throw her away. Mm. But they saved her, and she becomes just like basically like his adopted sister.
Right.
But she's actually lusting after him, and she's actually a demon. And the only way she keeps this beautiful complexion is by eating human hearts. Which
Sweet.
Is delivered to her by her stupid fucking canto pop sidekick.
Jesus, it sounds like a Hong Kong movie all of a sudden, all contrasting elements.
The dude in it, the dude's probably got nothing to do with canto pop, but he's this demon who goes invisible, and he's got like the cool short silver hair that's basically it's all been gelled. He's got a bright gold face with like stupid little scales, and of course he's got a long tongue so he could eat flies, and cool. A stupid CGI tongue shoots out his mouth. Of course we needed that part. But yeah, P's basically delivering her the hearts in order to keep her appearance. So basically she's wanting to step in and marry, well, become the concubine at least of the main general, well, the younger general. I think his name is Daniel Yun, and basically he's already married to Zhao Wei. And of course, Zhao Wei and Donnie Yen and Betty Sun Lee are all suspicious of her, and they're that close to noticing if she's a demon, but she always manages to be very convincing. No one else suspects it. A lot of stuff like that. And they realise the sidekick, and they say, oh, that must be the demon. And they go after him. And Donnie Yen does actually have quite a couple good fights with him, and there is actually a really good sequence, a good scene in the movie where it's like a rooftop chase. Where it's obviously there's the wire work where they jump from roof to roof and do little glides. It's awful reminiscent of Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Yeah.
But it's basically Donnie Yen chasing the demon, and it is just surprisingly fun.
Yeah, it seemed like it. I guess because it doesn't have, you know, wall to wall fights, it didn't really get talked about that much at the time. You know, people knew of it because when a Donnie Yen movie is announced, you know, there's a certain buzz. But I think this kind of came and went because it wasn't necessarily a martial arts or wuxia film. You know, as you said, it's more a fantasy ghost movie than anything else.
Yeah.
And Donnie Yen isn't the main star.
Of course. So, yeah, if you are wondering whether to see it or not, I'm highly recommending it. And obviously, if we do wait about, it might actually get UK release, because I think a lot of Donnie Yen's film, a lot of Donnie Yen's recent catalogue has all ended up on DVD due to labels like Cine Asia. So
right.
Maybe if you hold out for the next 6 months, we might actually end up getting that out over here as well.
Yeah, cool.
Yep, so the important thing we've not mentioned here is obviously the ban list is now being complete, which now means I'm allowed to buy movies again.
And how have you forgotten how to buy movies, or are you just kicked right into the habit?
Yes, it is strange going back onto Yes Age after all this time and looking at it. It's like, I was going to say I've missed a lot, but I've not really. There's nothing really has stood out since April last year. Man, that's insane that I've not actually touched a movie since then. Well, buying.
I'll pick up the likes of Vengeance, for fuck's sake. I mean,
of course, I do already have a list of films I'm planning on buying.
Yeah.
Let's see, I've got 4 already. Of course, we have Storm Warriors coming out on the 9th of February. So I'll be keen to see that.
Mm.
Then, of course, Vengeance. Accident by Soi Ching.
Yes.
And Murderer, the Aaron Kwok movie.
That's supposed to be quite a mental film because it's apparently has a really dumb, weird, insane twist in the middle of the film that people don't say what the twist is, but they say, "What the fuck was that?" It's almost laughing dozy, but I have no idea what it is, and I'm not gonna try and find out. It just sounds like it's like they introduced like an alien plot all of a sudden. It almost sounds like it's so out of left field that it might as well be that Aaron Kwok is an alien. I don't know.
See, I like the fact that it does look just looks really cool, and the way, like, the still shots we see where it's this really sinister Aaron Kwok, where he's kind of just peering over a wall, and there's still shots where he's kind of got a trickle, just looks like a big cut of blood across his face, and it looks really good. But of course...
Well, it's better than his concert photos, where he's like, has the swimming trunks.
With tinfoil.
Yeah, or has the swimming trunks on his chest, sort of, over his head and on his chest as well.
Mm-hmm.
Aaron.
So, if you have any recommendations for me, like any films you want me to check out, just fire your post onto podcastandfire@googlemail.com. Yep, so I think, well, they are 4 definite films for me. And of course, Murderer does include the fine, fine supporting actor, Chin Carlock.
Hmm, indeed.
So, come on. I need to give up for the Chin. So, I think that is us covered the first half of the show. So, break.
So, 2 brief news items. But they're all both big, in my eyes. Taken from FarEastFilms.com. They posted it a while ago, but Taxi Hunter, the Herman Yao film starring Anthony Wong, is coming to US DVD, courtesy of Discotheque Media, who did the wonderful Ebola Syndrome DVD remastered. They sourced to cut footage from the film. They did Chinese Torture Chamber Story. That's it. It's hard to keep track of these films. And also are releasing Herman Yao's vigilante thriller kind of a thing. Anthony Wong, his wife is killed by a taxi driver, and he goes after taxi drivers as a way of getting back. It's not a Category 3 movie, actually. It's a violent film, but it's quite a wonderful movie because he's this timid salesman who is driven by revenge, but it's not that easy to launch into like a gun-toting, you know, filled with revenge madman kind of thing. It's hard. It's hard to handle guns. There's a wonderful scene in the movie where he tries to practice how he's gonna, you know, like pull out his gun from his pocket or his below his belt stuffed inside his pants. How would that work? It will fall down his trouser leg. It turns out, you know, so it's not easy to be a vigilante killer, and it's a good movie. It's a very good movie. One of Anthony Wong's personal favorites, I've heard him say. So that's coming to DVD on the 23rd of February, 2010. sourced from a new print, I reckon, and fairly remastered, hopefully. So it's good stuff. But people haven't been discussing this. What they have been discussing is the announcement that North American video distributor Funimation have announced that they will be releasing 15 films from the Shaw Brothers back catalog on DVD. And the first titles on offer, by the way, this is sourced from firesfilms.com as well. The first titles on offer will be restored versions of The 14 Amazons and Shaolin Handlock, when they will hit shelves on 16th of March, although I've read the 23rd as well. And the remainder of the title to be released 2010 and 2011 are Sword of Swords, The Duel, The Lady Hermit, Invincible Shaolin, Soul of the Sword, Life Gamble, Shaolin Rescuers, Shaolin Prince, Bastard Swordsman, Opium and Kung Fu Master, which had a release from BCI, I believe, before, and a Blu-ray, The Supreme Swordsman, Return of Bastard Swordsman, and Hong Kong Godfather, the much sought after Hong Kong Godfather. It's a modern-day action film made in 85 with Lung Gai An. It's supposed to be very good. This is good news for people who want to see Shaw Brothers on DVD and in America, because Dragon Dynasty, they had pretty much some of these titles, if not all, and decided to drop them off the schedule for a variety of reasons that you can guess, sales being one, reckon. But it's wonderful that someone is... picking them up and giving them to American audiences, and giving them to audiences worldwide, really, because people are going to import these. What better film to actually start with? It's The 14 Amazons is a very famous movie, but not necessarily the one that people would associate with Shaw Brothers as soon as they thought of Shaw Brothers. Have you seen it, first of all, I should ask?
I haven't, no.
Right. It's basically this 14 Amazons in this case is all female warriors, and it's a marvelously entertaining and very violent movie in the vein of Chang Che's epic movies, you know, with epic battles on the battlefield, but it's basically the males are switched to females in a way, and they do as well. Betty Ling Po is one of them. Lily Ho, playing a male character. Lily Ho was, I believe, one of the stars of Intimate Confessions of a Chinese Courtesan, where she did play a female. And it's a great film as well. Shame they didn't have that. That would sell a lot, or a little, at least to me. At least I would buy one. It's a mesmerizing film. And it's pretty, despite so many characters, the 14 Amazons, they are 14. The directors, Dane Jackson character here and there. And one trivia note about the director, Ching Gong, this is the father of Ching Su Dong.
All right.
And Ching Su Dong actually debuted as co-action director on the film. This is made in 1972. And the style is more like Tonggai weapons and battlefield kind of a style. Tonggai being the other action director alongside Lau Garlong that did many Chang Che movies. That was his style, his knowledge was big weapons, cool weapons. And it's just a wonderfully entertaining film. It's not much depth as such, even though I described that the movie has character, but it's not. It's just a relentless movie with a lot of action that never gets boring. And hopefully these releases will feature the likes of dubs as well, English dubs. If they don't, then obviously it's going to be acceptable to me, by the way, but a lot of people would love to hear the English dubs on US releases of these as well, which would make for a good complement to the original language. And the wonderful cover, we're going to link to the newest item, and you'll see the cover. It says, "Hell hath no fury like 14 women scorned." Mm-hmm. Kind of cheesy, but, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm. The same with Shaolin Handlock.
Yeah. Kung Fu technique so lethal, they named a movie after it.
That.
It's it's a decent film, not one of the more memorable ones, mm-hmm. to be honest. Shaolin Handlock. I would recommend buying before the Amazons. I recommend renting Shaolin Handlock.
Yeah.
It's good. What's your thought on you Shaw Brothers getting an upswing in the in the US again?
Mm-hmm. Well, just all power to them, because if it's given a chance of getting more of those films released internationally, I'm all for it. I've never seen any of those films listed, and probably to the point where I might never will. I'll probably will see a couple of the popular ones over time, but yeah.
They probably won't be chosen for Shaw Brothers podcasts either. Mm-hmm. There might be classics in their own right. The 14 Amazons definitely is, but I think when you have to focus on finding like two or three primary key movies, the 14 Amazons necessarily isn't the one, even though it's a 5-star film in my view.
But yeah, it's not that I don't really have that interest in them. It's just the fact that really important movies from America is one of my least favorite things to do.
Mm. Do you have customs trouble?
It's usually a high price to most. Like, it's usually a price higher than I'd usually pay for when it comes to importing DVDs. And, of course, they are bringing films like 14 Amazon and Shaolin Handlock from the looks of the covers. Well, not from the looks of the covers. As you can know, it's on Shaolin Handlock. Is that David Chiang?
Yes.
Yes. See, I would be more interested in seeing this David Chiang movie than 14 Amazons. And it could just turn out to be this average Shaw Brothers Kung Fu movie.
Kind of is.
Yep, and things like that would leave a better taste in my mouth, and I'm more or less the person that stands out when it comes to Shaw Brothers movies for the 36 Chamber movies or something like the fucking cream of the crop.
Yes.
And as you had mentioned at the start, when it looked like Dragon Dynasty had disbanded their Shaw Brothers and basically started doing fuck all, and now this Funimation started releasing them. Funimation's releasing their movies on, I think, 16th of March, but actually on the 2nd of March, Dragon Dynasty are releasing Return to the 36th Chamber of Shaolin.
Yeah, that's right.
So, obviously they've not given up, but maybe the amount of effort going behind these DVDs probably won't be as significant.
Mm.
Sure, we might get a Bay Logan commentary, but I think he has parted ways with the company. I've not really bothered to look, but he's still got a blog there. Sure, they're still trying to keep his name attached to it, but
It's probably extras wise. It's probably
it'll be a bit thin. Yeah. We might get another classic commentary from maybe the RZA or Quentin Tarantino.
But I wouldn't really put down. I've heard good things about the RZA's contribution to whatever commentary he did. Was it King Box or was it Phantom Swordsman?
I think it was One Armed Swordsman, I would be sure. Because I think it was them along with Film Scholars. But heck, the reason these people were contacted for commentaries in the first place is because they knew their stuff. They were fans. It wasn't just, oh yeah, this is one of those Kung Fu films. Oh. Yep. Is that guy Jackie Chan? No. How about that guy? No. But yeah, obviously, it's I have respect for the people that do these commentaries because they know their stuff. They wouldn't just pull up any famous person and tell him, right, watch this film and tell us your thoughts.
Well, Stefan Hammond.
Well, okay.
Well,
right.
go in there, we'll press record and go. And he commentated on the movie. Literally. Here we are, walking up the steps.
Mm-hmm. I would not be surprised if one of those commentaries would actually start with the lines like, am I getting paid for this? Okay, right. So what's this film?
Give me fucking coffee! Well, that would be the Rick Myers kind of loose recording style, you remember the commentary where he left after like two-thirds of the movie, the new Mr. Vampire.
The new Mr. Vampire, yes.
Yeah.
He's watching and he's like, I think I actually preferred the first one. He just hit the sound of him putting off his headset, putting on the table and walking away. But yeah, it's actually cool to see that Return to the 36th Chamber is getting a Blu-ray release as well. So
yeah, they're doing
that and The Killer.
They're doing, someone is re-releasing, by the way, but I'm going to look up something here because in regards to 36 Chamber of Shaolin and Return movie, at least the first one, the distributor is named as Vivendi Entertainment and not Dragon Dynasty. Dragon Dynasty obviously did release the 36 Chamber of Shaolin, but I've seen Vivendi Entertainment listed on a few of these movies that Dragon Dynasty had. Mm-hmm. And did not release as well. And I'm sorry, but I'm going to look up Return as well to see if there's a Vivendi Entertainment listed on that as well. That may mean that Dragon Dynasty have lent out their rights, so to say. So I'm at the version, and it's Vivendi Entertainment listed as well. So it might be... Again, I don't have any details, so sorry if I'm totally wrong, but it might be in a cooperation with Dragon Dynasty, so they'll still have their logo on it or something like that, but the actual distribution is handled by Vivendi Entertainment, which is cool. So we're getting re-releases and on Blu-ray as well, and a few other titles that Funimation couldn't take or didn't want to take or something like that. I don't know what goes on behind the scenes, but so it's good that you mentioned that the Master Killer series, if you will, that's still alive. So hopefully Disciples will follow as well, the third movie, Disciples of the 36th Chamber.
So
it is an upswing, and hopefully it's hopefully it will be to most people's liking. I know it definitely won't be to all people's liking, but you know what you're gonna do. Mm-hmm. We have different standards. I have most of the famous films, but many of the Funimation films I have not seen, actually. So it's, if they're valuable discs in terms of if they put the dub on there and stuff, then a purchase might be needed. Out of all the titles, Hong Kong Godfather is the one I'm probably, you know, zooming in.
That's the Gordon Liu film, isn't it?
No, it's Lung Gai An, and I think Johnny Wang directed it. It's a violent modern day action movie. Gordon Liu might be in it. I could pull up Hong Kong database, and I have Hong Kong database, so I can keep talking and typing at the same time.
I do vaguely remember when it was the Celestial, like the Region 3 release, and there was some sort of...
It's Lung Gai An, Norman Chu, Johnny Wang, directed by Johnny Wang, and no sign of Gordon Liu.
Because there's this one film where he was on the front cover, and I'm sure it's something to do with either, like Godfather was in the title.
I know what you mean. I can see the coming front to me. It's like a Godfather, you know, Francis Ford Coppola Godfather, like gangster, you know. So he's in a slick suit and stuff like that. But it's not this one. This is more of a gritty urban action, if you will, and it has a very famous violent ending. A lot of slashing. So with familiar sound effects, so you can probably see that ending on YouTube, because the movie has been in circulation in Mandarin for a couple of years, in bootleg circulation. But it's been a version of the film that's been cut in some way. So hopefully this will therefore represent an uncut version. It's probably violent cuts we're talking. So hopefully some of that will be restored. But Hong Kong Godfather, that's a bust title. Out of all these, I think, and the 14 Amazons as well, because it's the closest to release. It's the one that's going to be released soonish.
Yeah.
But all good, and you'll get the Forest Films link. There's also a link to Amazon.com in that news item, so you can pre-order it there if that's your chosen. If you like to pre-order it from Amazon. And we'll see what happens. We'll keep you posted if there's anything more to discuss about the Funimation catalog. Mm-hmm. Should we move on?
Yep, go for it.
A little bit. A question we have this week from David Dr. Mac Lam. And by the way, Mr. Lam, David, you haven't listened to enough Podcast on Fires. There is tons of Johnny Toe love there, and I'm sure there will be more. So do listen to some old stuff. You'll find lots of love for Johnny Toe. David writes a blog called Exiled Film Reviews, the footnotes of an obsessive reviewer, and he's, among other things, reviewed the POF classic, Scared Stiff. And when I read that review, I felt like doing a commentary on that movie. We have discussed it in depth, but I like that film.
It fits the category of our past films of mismatched couples.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it has the same material.
Yeah. We'll see what happens there. But we'll do his question here. Should Chow Yun-Fat think about returning to Hong Kong cinema? Stuff like Bulletproof Monk and Dragon Ball Evolution, yeehaw, is seriously tarnishing his once pristine reputation. I'd rather have him make another homoerotic gangster flick with his pal John Woo. And he says, please stop with the epics. He's certainly not a fan of Redcliffe. I haven't seen it myself. Then have to sit through Pirates of the Caribbean 3. So, Stu, what's your opinion of Chow Yun-Fat's career choice?
He has done decent American films. Of course, his most notable one would be like the Pirates films and Dragon Ball. But I think us, we know him for his John Woo films. And it would be great to see him like back in these John Woo films. And of course, there was the talk of him being in one of the Redcliffe movies, but this is not the John Woo films we want to see him in.
Mm.
Sure, we wanted to see him slide in a staircase with dual pistols, but I'd actually be more in favour to see him with the main crime director of this past decade, Johnny To.
Yeah.
Like, I would... Come on. this is the guy that's been in... Well, Johnny To's a director that's made all these really epic crime... gangster films. It's like, this is going to be right up Chow Yun-Fat Street. He could easily pull off the role that we've seen Simon Yam play in several films.
Yeah, you know, Johnny To makes motherfuckers look cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And Chow Yun-Fat, we know he's the, you know, the one of the prime representation of cool for his past movies. But you bring up a good point, which actually leads into one of my points here. I get when people say, oh, I would like him to do another John Woo movie, just like it was. And you're kind of, hopefully they mean that, you know, they're going to make a reunion movie based on how they feel now about movie making and stuff like that. Because I'm not really in favor of, you know, recapturing an old magic.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So I'm happy to see a reunion, but I hope they make like a, you know, whatever they choose to make, and hopefully it's modern, it's in gangster flavor, but I wouldn't want, you know, these old folks go back 20 years and try and do what they did, because I don't think they want to either. Having said that, I think people tend to forget that the likes of Chow Yun-Fat has made a return, but he goes back and then he returns.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have will be co-productions like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, Curse of the Golden Flower. Curse of the Golden Flower. And now Confucius.
Yes,
yes. Pronounce it? Which I don't know anything of, but Chow Yun-Fat, now I want to see it. Mm-hmm. So I think you're not going to get a pure return where he says, like, fuck you, Hollywood. I got your money. I'm going back. But a back and forth. And hopefully that back and forth will still mean a slight reduction of the movie choices that's come out of Hollywood via Chow Yun-Fat. And, you know, you got to think back, really, when all of these actors and directors decided to go to Hollywood. It was before 1997.
Right.
And there was a lot of people unsure of what would happen to Hong Kong cinema, what would happen to Hong Kong once Chinese rule was a fact. So I'm sure that played into it in some ways, but that doesn't really excuse some of the movie choices, especially of latter years of the likes of Chow Yun-Fat. He's had an alright career, but by now he's not going to break through as hard as the people bringing him over wanted him to. You know what I mean? Because they did design Replacement Killers as the killer in America. And I think Replacement Killers is a fine opening vehicle for Chow Yun-Fat. I think it's really good, you know, because it is what it is. And I quite enjoyed that. Corruptor, I had a hard time with because I didn't like Mark Wahlberg in that film. I think it's really terrible. but Anna and the King is wonderful. That's Terry Fat in his element. Unfortunately, a flop.
Right.
And,
yeah.
And of course, Dragon Ball and Bulletproof Monk aren't necessarily good choices. Bulletproof Monk is a shit film. Chai Fat is cool in it. For a few, you know, a few minutes of cool is in there, but it still, you know, it does hurt his reputation. So I think Chai Fat has thought about returning to Hong Kong cinema, but nowadays it's co-productions that reign supreme because that's the way the market is with the mainland and also America, mainland, Hong Kong co-productions. And Chai Fat is returning to his grounds. I mean,
he has been listed for a mainland movie for this year, which is an action comedy entitled Let the Bullets Fly.
Right, there you go. That's something for the fans to hope for. Hopefully the bullets will fly. What was it? Yeah, the one movie that truly made me happy because it showed that Chai Fat had the magic still left in him, and when he's comfortable with a production and a language and a director, there's still some magic in it. And the Postmodern Life of My Aunt.
Yes.
It's a wonderful performance. He's a right bastard in the film. He's a con man. It's a supporting role, as a matter of fact, but he is great. It's the old Chai Fat, albeit it's a drama comedy sort of thing. But again, you should never forget that Chai Fat was a really accomplished comic actor as well. He's really funny. Manic. But really, really funny and dramatic actor, of course, and Autumn's Tale and stuff like that. So, and working with a director like An Hui, who directed the movie I mentioned, so that movie just makes me really happy. He still got it, and so we'll see. But the Hollywood career is not going to go anywhere.
Yep, and he has still one last Hollywood movie coming out this year, which was the John Cusack project, Shanghai, which seems to be getting delayed.
Right.
Which stars Chow Yun-fat and Gong Li, but of course, they'll all be based around John Cusack.
Right.
So
is it that like, high fidelity means a Shanghai gangster flick? That would be really cool. Is it a gangster flick by the looks of it?
Well, the main themes here is this is a mystery, romantic, drama, thriller. So, yep, it's a 40s period piece which revolves around an American who returns to Shanghai in the months before Pearl Harbor.
Right, okay.
So
why not?
It could be decent.
Yeah.
We'll probably flop.
Yeah. It's no 2012. It's no Avatar.
Yep. Ah, exactly. It's no Avatar.
Shanghai 3D!
Watch the bullets start to fly at
you. Yeah, in 3D. But yeah, Under the Right Direction, by the way, speaking of that movie title when you said that, Let the Bullets Fly, I was thinking of Shoot 'Em Up, the Clive Owen film. You know, there's still people that can make this really fun kind of Hong Kong-esque movies with today's tools. And you never know. You never know if John Woo can channel that or want to channel that and make a fun action movie. But shoot 'em up, if you haven't seen it, people, and Stu, go see it. It's hella fun.
It's pretty mental.
Yeah. Clive Owen really excels in that film. It's just short too, I think, and lots of cool killings. Hey, stuff. That might satisfy your urge for heroic bloodshed or acrobatic Hong Kong action. Shoot 'em up should be right up your alley. Did you like it?
It was pretty mad, indeed. I think it was just a genre and non-stop, as I can remember. It was a few years ago.
Yeah.
But, yep.
All right. Are we done?
I think we have answered that question.
Right. Do you have any plugging before I unleash some?
Nothing than what we've mentioned already.
Right.
You can find us on Twitter, just Podcast on Fire. Same with Facebook, search for us. And yeah, we could invite people to go along to David's website, which was exiledfilmreviews.com. viviti.com.
And this link will be available as well.
Yes, we will have it in the show post.
Mr. David Mac, David Dr. Maclam. Mm-hmm. But yeah, why not plug a few podcasts?
Go for it.
Because we're not the only podcast out there. So I found, I think there was, someone sent me the link, might be Trent Reed. He certainly sent me the link of the other plug I'm going to do. But nevertheless, I found Mondo Movie Podcast, which is located at mondomovie.com, which is done out of London with two fellas named Ben Howard and Dan Orty. And they are focusing on Asian cinema occasionally with movies like doing reviews of First, Ombak 2, Queen of Black Magic. I think that's Indonesia. A classic movie from Indonesia, Good, Bad, and the Weird. But more importantly, they are doing you know, they have a horror cult movie vibe to their movies, old and new. I mean, recent shows. They recently reached the 100th show, which appropriately enough, was the best films of the decade show. So good timing. But earlier shows focused on Paranormal Activity. First, Night of the Creeps, which is an old 80s horror comedy. They done, you know, reports from Fright Fest, Spoken of Man from Hong Kong, Dario Argento stuff, like Four Flies on the Grey Velvet. I think that's Dario Argento. My Bloody Valentine, JCVD interviewing the director of Reanimator, talking about Hellboy 2, and, you know, Machine Girl. So they're and listen to a few shows, and they have a good repertoire going, and they're very fun and easy to listen to, and it's a podcast I highly recommend. MondoMovie.com. Again, it will be linked to, and in the top 20 that they presented in their 100th episode, their respective top 20 list of the movies of best movies of the decade, Infernal Affairs found its way into there, and a few other Korean movies from Park Chan-wook, of course. And Kim Ki-duk, and Kill Bill was in there, stuff like that. So it's very fun, well-made podcast. So I highly recommend it. And also B-movie cast. We're hitting on a theme here, cult movie exploitation kind of thing. But I got this link because this fellow by the name of Vince Rotolo, sorry if I'm pronouncing your name wrong, does this show out of South Carolina, USA. And he did a show on Gorgo, which is the UK-produced kaiju movie, monster movie. So you have a, you know, an Asian tinge, if you will. It's good fun. It's a good discussion. I like this kind of movies, cult movies, exploitation, 70s, 80s in particular. It's just fun to listen to fans interacting in that regard. And his latest episode, 85, focuses on a movie called Satan's School for Girls. So, you know, you have like driving-esque kind of movies as well. You know what I mean? So it's good fun. More podcasts out there, but these are two notable ones, and you'll get both links. And hopefully, guys, you have time to return the favor to Podcast on Fire and have a chance to listen to us. And finally, the best Twitter account ever. It's located at twitter.com/HK subtitles. And it's not a joke. We don't treat it as a joke. That's all I'm saying. Investigate for yourselves what twitter.com/HK subtitles is. All right. Quiet, I make. That's all I'm saying. All right, sir. Wrap it up.
Okay, so I've been your host for the evening. And joining me, of course, we've had Ken.
Ken, hey.
Yes. So, catch us next time. Yeah. I think I need to sort out that exit music. Okay, we don't need to hear it twice.